Welcome back to the Strong and Lean at Any Age podcast. I am Susan Ebergall, and today my partner in crime, Jordan Syatt, is back on board with me. We have a great discussion that covers a lot of territory. We talk about why he and I both believe that using the formula goal weight times 12 for fat loss is a great formula for the vast majority of people. And we also talk about why there are some people, when they crunch those numbers, think, wow, that's a lot of calories, and why that is, what's actually going on with that. We also talk about how we often get messages from people who are telling us they are only eating 1,200 calories, but they're not losing weight. We walk you through what's actually happening there and our response to that, and then how we deal with the anger and the frustration and the defensiveness that can come from the person when we talk about why we think this is happening. There's a lot of psychology in this episode. I think you're really, really going to enjoy it because it affects absolutely everything that we do to reach our goals. So go grab your coffee, put up your feet, and take a listen. I think you're really going to love this episode. If you do, if you wouldn't mind going and giving us a rating over on iTunes, that would be amazing. That will get this podcast out to more and more people. Thank you so much for being here. Enjoy the episode.
Hello there.
Well, hello, Susan.
Well, hello there. We are coming to you from Syatt Fitness headquarters in New York City.
Live in New York City.
Here we are again.
We got the Susan Niebergall podcast.
Yeah, great to do this together, as always.
It's good to have you in New York.
Yeah, it's been great to be here. We've had a productive trip.
Arguably the most productive and efficient inner circle making few days that we've ever had.
I would 100% agree with that. I think we have found the perfect rhythm for this.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be great.
Just finished the next inner circle workout, which we're calling politically incorrect. It's just the name of the workout. It actually is. I think there's going to be a lot of politically incorrect phrases coming out, like a lot of cuss words coming out when people are doing it.
So. I think so. Yes. I think there's going to be a lot of that, but it's going to be great. That whole edition, a lot of good things in there.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
It'll be fun. I thought we would start by talking about something that I actually just posted about, and it's a common thing. I think both you and I get a lot of questions about, and inner circle people as well ask us these questions, and that's about the calorie calculation thing. And not only from a perspective of like, how does the calculation even come to play? Like, how do you get times 12 or times 11 or whatever, that piece of it. But then when people actually take their goal weight and multiply it by 12, let's say, and they look at the number and they're going, wow, that sounds like a lot. Like, I can't lose weight eating that many calories.
Yeah.
And all that. Do you get that a lot?
All the time.
Yeah.
One of the most common questions is, I've done your calorie calculation. The issue is, it seems like a lot of calories. It seems like a lot of calories compared to other calculators they've done, whether it's on MyFitnessPal or other people in the fitness industry. And it seems like a lot just for them, because usually when they're tracking their calories, they're doing it when they're being very strict and very rigid, when they're at their all-time best, which is usually also when they're losing weight. Eventually they get to a point where it's too much, mm-hmm. and they quit or they binge. And when that happens, they're not counting their calories. They don't know how many they're eating, and oftentimes they massively underestimate it. So it might seem high compared to what you do when you're at your best, but if you actually look at the overall how consistent you're being, you're going to be eating fewer calories on our calculation for a longer period of time, versus if you do it the way most people do it, they'll go very, very low calorie for a very brief period of time, lose a lot of weight, then regain it. And when they're regaining it, they're eating way more. Mm-hmm. So the reason our calculation is higher is because it's an easier number to sustain long term while you're in a calorie deficit.
I think that's what people don't get. And I think it comes from just the experience of I have to be eating 1,000 calories or 1,100 or 1,200 was the example I used, or I can't lose weight.
Yep.
And I think when they do restrict that much, those episodes of either binging or overeating or just going out for the weekend and saying, screw it, I'll start again on Monday, we don't remember those days.
Yep.
And so then they're thinking, wait a minute, I can't lose weight on 1,200 calories. I need to take more away. Well, because you really weren't eating 1,200. That's and exactly I think right. people don't get that. Because when they go to right away, they get a little defensive and going, no, wait a minute, I am. I promise I'm tracking everything and I'm doing this, I'm doing that.
Yep.
No.
Yeah. And it's frustrating for everyone involved because it's one of the things, the thing that I like to talk about here is when someone says it, when they're swearing up and down, like they're eating properly, they're doing it right, 9.9 times out of 10, they're actually not lying. They're telling what they believe to be the truth.
Correct, yes.
The issue is when you look at the research around self-reporting and when you look at the research around people who are consistently struggling to lose weight, they are also consistently underestimating how much they're eating. And there's a show, I believe it's in the UK, it's called Secret Eaters. Mm. It's a really, really interesting show. Basically, the premise of which people who are struggling to lose weight, who are supposedly counting their calories, who are supposedly doing things right, there are like hidden cameras where they watch them eat all day and all night, and it's always like a huge shock to them. And they're like, oh my God, I didn't think about that. I didn't think about that. I didn't think about that. It's one of those things where it's like, until you're actually that's why I love what you say in terms of write everything you eat down, because you don't even need to track the calories yet.
No,
just write it down, because usually you're forgetting things you're eating. And it's very easy to go into a very brief phase of fat loss where you're being very strict, very rigid, and on point, and think that that is the only way for you to lose fat because that's the only way you've been successful. But the reality is you haven't been successful because you go off track relatively quickly and then regain it. Losing weight isn't the successful part. It's sort of like when you have someone who's gambling. Like, just because you're gambling, you didn't win. And just because you almost won doesn't mean you won. You lost.
Yeah.
Losing weight, you don't win just because you lose weight. You win after you lose weight and maintain the weight loss. So if you think the only way for you to succeed is through radically reducing your calories, you're wrong. The way that you win is slightly reducing your calories and being consistent with that for a long time. And that is when you win.
I guess and by the way, that show sounds fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
That show sounds amazing. Because I think that happens more often than not. And every time I have someone just write down what they're eating. Forget measuring, weighing, who cares? Just write down what it is. A bite of this, a taste of that, handful of this, whatever.
Yeah.
They're in shock. 100%. Just from that. And then what's interesting is people start making changes just from that.
Exactly.
Like they think twice about reaching for something. And so much of that is mindless. And it's something that we just don't think about because we just stand up and we walk over there and we get a handful of something and we keep going. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes we tell ourselves that small little handful, that's not really going to matter until you do that multiple times in a day.
Yeah.
I'm guilty as charged on that.
I think it happens to me all the time where I'll go to the end of the day where if I didn't track or whatever, and I'll be like, oh, I didn't really have that much food today. And then I'll go back and I'll replay my day and I'll be like, oh, I forgot about that. I forgot about that. I forgot about that. It very quickly adds up, mm-hmm. which is why when you have someone who's swearing up and down that they're tracking their calories meticulously and they're doing it right, but they're not losing weight, I always the first thing I'll do is I'll say, write it down and send me what you write down. Then I'll keep tracking their weight. If it's still not working, then I'll say, send me pictures of everything you're eating.
I've done that too, yeah.
Send me of everything you're eating in every single meal, every single day, including water. I want to see everything. Now, usually there's one of several responses, one of which is they won't email me. They won't email me that picture, which is usually their way of either they know they're not actually doing it properly, or they just don't want to show me, The other option is they'll email with everything they're eating, and they'll be like, oh, I didn't realize that I was having that. I didn't have that. Even though they said they were writing it down, they didn't realize the portion size. They weren't really actually paying attention to it. And they were actually still forgetting to write certain things down. And then also, this is the biggest one of all, is like dinners out or meals out, especially on the weekend or work dinners or something, where even something, for example, where they go to a Mexican restaurant and there's chips on the front of the table. Like, they don't think that it's that many calories. But even just 14 chips, you know, like 20 chips add up very quickly. And if you're having guacamole with it, just the chips alone could run you 500 to 700 calories.
Yeah, easy.
And if you're like the person like me who gets the chips refilled, now you're talking about like 1,000 calories before you even eat your meal yet.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things where if you think you're being perfect, write everything down, take pictures of it, ideally weigh it at least for a short period of time just so you know exactly how much you're eating. And when you do this for a period of time, then you'll realize the calorie calculation really isn't that high at all. It's that you've been consistently inconsistent. And when you are consistent, you are unbelievably rigid with it so that you become inconsistent. It's just, it's not possible to sustain.
Yeah. Do you ever have anybody that's not being upfront with what they're reporting, whether it's pictures or...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not because they're being malicious and it's not because they're bad people. It's because they're embarrassed and they're ashamed and like they, it's something that they know they want to fix and they wish they could fix.
They want to please too.
Yeah.
I mean,
they want you to be proud of that as your coach. They want you to be proud. And I think that's one of the reasons why people always look for, well, it must be my age or it must be my gender or it must be my metabolism. They're looking for these things because they don't want to let themselves down and they don't want to let people in their life down. So it's easier to find an excuse that's outside of your control than it is to put in the extra work to really figure out, okay, where are you overeating?
Yeah, it's 100%. And you don't have to look within yourself anymore or take responsibility.
Yeah,
it's huge. It is huge. And it's tough. I mean, to take that on internally, knowing that you have been screwing something up and feeling bad about it or whatever and trying to hop back on. I mean, I can relate to that. It's not easy to do. But if you can take that step and do it, man, things just change pretty quickly.
In all aspects of your life.
Yeah.
I think that's a good topic to discuss. Someone just asked me on Instagram today to the effect of, because someone, I don't know, I think it was yesterday, someone asked, what questions do I ask potential clients, one of which being, how confident are you in your ability to succeed? And usually I do this on a 1 to 10 scale. So like 1 being you don't believe in your ability at all, 10 believing you 100% without question believe in your ability. And someone asked, well, how are you supposed to believe in yourself if you've never done it before? Like how do you build up the confidence in yourself to succeed if you aren't confident and if you've never been able to do it before? And it's almost like the catch 22, right? Because the only way to build more confidence is to actually do it. But oftentimes the only way to do it is when you're confident in yourself, right? So, but realistically, if we're looking at the order of events, the only way you're gonna be able to build more confidence is through doing it. And you do have the choice to do it or not. That choice is always in your hands. And that's why, especially you and I, are very big proponents of something is always better than nothing and doing something small and racking up those wins, not changing things in a minute. Some people do very well cold turkey. I'd say most people do not. And if you're struggling with your self-confidence and your belief to succeed, then rather going, okay, I'm going to go from whatever I'm doing to 1,200 calories a day or whatever I'm doing to working out 7 days a week, then start by walking. Start by just writing down the foods you're eating. Just because as soon as you start doing something that maybe you didn't want to do, but it's only a slight nuisance, it's only slightly adding more time to your day, then you'll start to build up confidence that you can do it. This is why I'm a huge fan of making my bed, even though I hate it, because it starts my day with an action of discipline.
Yeah.
And the more you do that, then the more you'll build up your confidence and your ability to succeed as you go on.
I think that that's a great point. Taking something small and doing it over and over and over again. And yeah, letting that confidence now bleed into something else. And even now I want to take on this.
Yep.
You know, and then you do that. You do those two things and then you're going to build another thing and another thing. I mean, we talk about this with the Inner Circle all the time about even goal stacking, kind of the same. It's the same kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think it makes a big difference. And in something like this with calories, I think can make a significant difference and really point out kind of what's really happening. Because I think people think they're truly starving themselves or whatever on 1,000 or 1,100 calories. And I guess we ought to pause here for a second and preface it that there are some people out there where these numbers that we're throwing around are maybe appropriate for. I mean, a small group of the population.
Very small percentage, yeah. But yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, if you are a small person, there's not a lot of you, and you don't weigh much to begin with. You know, if you weigh 100 pounds wet, you're going to not need a lot of calories. And I think I get a little pushback from some of those people. Well, I'm a da-da-da-da-da, you know, I'm this tall, and then it's probably appropriate for you. You know, okay. But for most of us, it's not. And I think we've gotten into a mindset of scarcity. Like I have to be miserable. I have to starve myself, essentially. I have to eat as little as possible or I can't lose weight.
Yep.
Instead of, let me see how much I can eat while still losing weight.
Absolutely.
What a difference.
It's huge. It's the difference between like a more of a positive mindset versus a negative mindset, optimistic versus pessimistic.
Abundance and scarcity is what I was talking about. Yeah.
As soon as you feel like you're not allowed to do something, all of a sudden you want to do it.
Yeah.
As soon as you feel like you're not allowed to, I mean, for me, like anytime I see a fire alarm, I just want to pull it because like,
You're not supposed to.
There's this like intrinsic uniqueness and value and something that's intriguing about doing something that you're not supposed to do. But also, as soon as someone tells you that's off limits, then that's all you think about. It's sort of like when someone begins a diet that's like, well, don't have carbs anymore. And then you go out to dinner with your friends who are eating carbs. You're just like, oh, God, you're so lucky. I'd love some of those carbs. Yeah. And that's all you think about. It's like when you get really restrictive with your diet, all you think about is all the foods you can't eat. And then you start watching Food Network. And then like all you're spending all your time looking at the foods that you'd love to eat, but you can't because woe is me and I'm trying to lose weight. When the reality is when you start focusing on a more inclusive diet, things that you can eat and what you can add into your diet, then you are still allowed to eat the other foods. It's just you want to focus on adding the ones that are going to be more nutrient rich, less calorie dense, and the foods that are going to fill you up more. Mm-hmm. So when you do have the other foods, it's because you're, number one, you're enjoying it, not binging on it, and two, because you can have it in an appropriate portion.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think learning how to incorporate all foods like that, I think, is super important. I'm dealing with someone out there in Instagram land via the messaging, and then she was telling me that she's super frustrated because she's been in a calorie deficit for a year and a half.
Okay. And how much does she weigh, do you know?
I don't know how much. She didn't tell me her weight, but she has told me that she swears she's been in a calorie deficit. She was going in the close to 100% of the time. And she has not seen much change, if any.
So this is important to discuss because by definition, you're not in a calorie deficit.
I would agree.
And I think a lot of people get confused here because they're swearing up and down that they're eating a certain number of calories. So let's just say, for example, that you've been told that your calorie deficit is 1,500 calories. And you're legitimately eating 1,500 calories. So you're, by whatever that person told you, you would be in a calorie deficit, but you're not losing fat over time. Then that person was wrong. 1,500 isn't your calorie deficit because if you've actually been eating that, then you would have lost fat. So by definition, you are not in one.
Right.
Now, we also have to discuss if you are swearing up and down that you're in a calorie deficit and you're still not losing weight, even like, it doesn't matter if you have PCOS, it doesn't matter if you have hypothyroidism. If you're in a calorie deficit, you'll lose fat. This is really important though, because then we can go into the PCOS and hypothyroidism discussion, which is if you're not being medicated for that, then your calorie deficit will be way lower.
Way lower.
Than someone who has a healthy hormonal profile, which is why it's very important to get medicated so that you can bring your levels back to normal. But regardless of where your calorie deficit is, if you are actually in one, then you're losing fat.
100%.
So simply by the fact that she hasn't lost fat, that means she hasn't been in one as consistently as she thinks.
Yep. Totally agree. And she would say her issue is that she she has restricted her calories to what she feels is a low enough place to not. She shouldn't have to lower them anymore. She can't imagine lowering them anymore. So then it comes back to, okay, someone saying that they're consistently, and in her words, 100% of the time in a calorie deficit, obviously, or that number, what she thinks is a calorie deficit, it's probably not happening anyway. Because Who can do that for a year and a half?
Correct.
There's no human that can do that for a year and a half. There's none. So if you start with that, so there's that piece of it. And then maybe that's the reason why these numbers aren't what they appear to be for somebody. But how would you break through someone like that? Because they are, you can feel the heels dug in a lot.
Oh yeah, they're super, super upset. And like,
and I mean, I get it. They're frustrated. They feel like they're putting in all this work and they feel like they're doing what they're supposed to do.
Yep. The, in a one-on-one coaching scenario, which I'm not doing currently, but what I would ask the person is I'd say, do me a favor and tell me one thing you're doing very well with your nutrition. And then tell me one thing that you think you can improve with your nutrition. This gives them the opportunity to be proud of themselves and say what they're doing well. And it also opens them up to be a little bit more honest with what an objective with their actions. And usually when they go to the part where they can improve, they'll start to say things like to the effect of, oh, well, you know, on weekends, like I could probably track a little bit better, something like that. Or, you know, sometimes at night, you know, I'll eat some things I don't track, eating off my kid's plate, whatever it is. And I'll say, tell me more about that. Like what's happening during that time frame? And then they go into a story of actually what's happening. And then I can circle back to what they originally said, where they said they've been in a calorie deficit for a year and a half. And I could say, okay, so you've been working very hard. And fat loss and calorie deficit has been on your mind 24/7. So in your mind, you feel like you're constantly trying and restricting and doing it well. But like you just outlined here, you're not really being as strict as you think in these situations and in these situations. And it's more likely than not that you probably ended up eating more and out of your calorie deficit in these situations on a more or less weekly basis. Knowing that, what do you think we should do going forward? And I always put it in their court, what do you think we should do now? And with that, then they can start to be a little bit more open-minded, or either they'll be like more open-minded, like, wow, I didn't realize that. Or they'll be like, well, no, I mean, you don't understand, or like that wasn't what I meant. And then they'll backtrack a little bit, in which case there's more resistance. And then I usually come down a little bit harsher and say, listen, you just told me this is what's happening and now you're backtracking. We can either pretend like you didn't say that, or you can actually face this with the truth and the reality and figure out how we're going to make a change going forward. And the people who are willing to be objective and honest. Actually, I remember I did a podcast with a woman named Kim who really struggled with binge eating, and during the podcast, it was a lot of motivational interviewing, and she struggled with binge eating, she struggled with losing weight and yo-yo dieting, and during the podcast, I could hear that she was getting defensive and resistant in everything she was saying. It sounded like she was doing it perfectly, and I brought it up. I was like, you're getting defensive. And she's like, I can feel it. I was like, you need to recognize if you feel yourself getting defensive, and if you feel like I'm 100% doing everything perfectly and it's just not working, then you have to realize that it's something you're doing. It's not that your body is broken. It's not that your metabolism is broken. It's not that your gender is rigging the system. It's nothing. It's you're missing something. And if your response to that is getting defensive and looking for all the reasons why that's not true, then you'll find whatever you want to find. But the truth is, it's actually a positive when you know that you're making a mistake somewhere, because then you can fix it. And if you're open and objective enough to finding that truth and to finding where you're making a mistake, then you can fix it and you can reach your goal. But either you're going to be defensive, dig your heels in the sand, and not be willing to see the area you're making a mistake, or you'll be open enough and you will.
Yeah, I think that happens so much. And I think it is the internal struggle. Like, that means I've screwed up. That means I've failed. Then that can bring up all kinds of stuff. I think people go through that. And it's a tough road. But I'll tell you, once you take that step to the other side, then change starts to happen slowly but surely. And I think people realize, maybe it's what you said, they're actually eating off their kid's plate, or they're doing other things fairly consistently that's really making the numbers that are being reported actually higher. Or maybe that the number that they have been dutifully doing for a while, maybe that is not the number for them for whatever reason. You know, and I guess that's a whole nother thing. People seem to think that when you recommend a goal body weight times 12, that is a guarantee that will work for everyone. Mm-hmm. One size fits all. No, it's not. And how many times I know that we both say, this is a place where you can start.
Yep.
But you have to give it a fair shot. You can't try it sorta, for 2 weeks and then expect, well, it didn't work. See, it was too high, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, 30 days, I even like 60 days really, because give yourself some real decent living time.
No, it was literally just in the Inner Circle Live yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
There was a woman who was saying that this is her goal body weight, and this is or this was her current body weight, and this is what she's eating for fat loss, and based on that formula, and the amount that she was eating was way too low.
Mm-hmm.
From not for just in general, but it was too low for her current body weight, and because she was already relatively lean, we increased her calories.
Yes,
because. Yep. That was like the exception to the rule, where someone was such a low body weight already and such a low body fat that she could actually eat more rather than the guidelines that are in that body weight by 12 or goal body weight times 12. But like you're saying, and I think this is one of the most important things to remember, most people, they're looking for the perfect macro calculator, the perfect calorie calculator. Just give me the exact number mm-hmm. of calories that I need to eat that are, it's going to be perfect for me. And there is no perfect number mm-mm. of calories for a number of reasons, not least of which, unless you're a robot, then your day-to-day calorie expenditure is going to be different. The amount that you eat will be different unless you're tracking your calories and being careful with that. So the amount that you need on any given day is going to change. And a lot of people might hear this and get confused and like, well, what does that mean? It means you start with the calculator that we use, goal body weight times 12, and track your progress for 30 days, 60 days, and adjust from there.
Mm-hmm.
If you're actually legitimately consistent for the first 30 days, then you should see a drop in weight,
mm-hmm.
at least like 1 to 2 pounds, 1 to 3 pounds, 1 to 4 pounds, probably on the higher end. If you don't see that drop, then you can make a change. Then mm-hmm. you can look at what you're doing and maybe reduce your calories further or see if you're missing calories. If you do see a change and you've dropped 1 to 3, 1 to 4 pounds over that month, then stay with it. You found a calorie deficit, but there's no perfect here. There's mm-hmm. no, you're not going to find it. No, there's no calculator that's going to magically give it to you.
Yeah.
Start with this starting point and adjust from there.
Yeah. It's a trial and error. And it's so funny. People don't want to hear that. I think,
at all.
And I think what I get feedback on is, well, then I will have wasted 30 days, you know, by doing something that didn't work.
Such an awful mindset.
It is. It is an awful mindset.
It's
because
inaccurate.
It's completely inaccurate. And I think you can transfer this to a lot of things that happen in life. You know, you have an opportunity to do something in life and you go do it and you find out, you know what, this wasn't for me. Well, how valuable is that? That's incredibly valuable to know that, okay, I don't need to pursue this avenue anymore because that's not what I like to do.
Yep.
It's the same thing here. So you go down a goal body weight times 12. You were meticulous for 30 days and it didn't work. Okay, so you now know maybe you have to either change up how you're eating, whatever, or maybe you just take it to maybe goal body weight times 11 and see if you sit better there or 10 or whatever. You adjust something. But you know that what you did, knowing that that something didn't work, is super helpful.
Not to mention a lot of the people who say like, well, then I've wasted 30 days.
Yeah.
They're usually coming off 10, 15, 20, 30 plus years of not making the progress they want. It's like, cool, then don't do it.
Yeah.
It's like my response, I have no patience for that anymore. It's like,
yeah.
If your response is going to be, well, I don't want to waste 30 days. It's like, you know what? Don't try it. We're not making this content for shits and giggles.
Yeah.
We're not making this because
yeah.
it doesn't work. We're doing this because if you actually do what we say and are open-minded enough and are objective enough, then it will work.
Yeah.
But sorry, there's no quick fix.
No.
There's no a definitive answer for every single person. You try it. You see what worked. You see what didn't. And you adjust.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations. Welcome to life and adulthood.
Yeah, pretty much it. And it comes back to the second question that you always like to ask. When you're interviewing somebody at the beginning, you had the first question that you ask about their belief in their ability to succeed.
Yep.
And this comes back to kind of the second question.
Yeah. Which is, I'm trying to remember, oh, I just had it in my head. The second question is...
fast or slow.
Would you prefer to
yeah.
make sustainable progress
yeah.
that is slower in nature? Or would you prefer to make faster progress that is less sustainable? And from a coaching perspective, I will humbly say I think this is probably my best idea I've ever had, in which it was all done when I was doing one-on-one coaching. It was all done via email. And first they would fill this out in a form before we began the coaching process. And I'd say, would you prefer faster progress that's harder to maintain or slower progress that's easier to maintain? And I'd, in an open response, I'd say, tell me why. And they'd write it out. And I think that you might want to do this yourself if you are struggling or you just want to just keep track of where your mindset is. Answer that question for yourself and write it out. Mm-hmm. Write it in a Word document and keep it with you. And what would happen is, whether it was a week, or you, the majority of people within 2 weeks, they didn't lose as much weight as they wanted to, and they'd get really upset. And they'd be like, why isn't this working, da da da, whatever. And I would just go to their open response and I'd copy and paste it and I'd send them an email with it. And I would say, "That does that sound familiar to you? Like, who wrote that?"
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, wow, you're good. That was good. And they understood why I had them do it at that point in time. And I think it's the perfect time and place for, if you're getting frustrated with your rate of weight loss, or you're mm-hmm. getting frustrated with your progress, then you can always go back to, would you prefer faster progress that is less sustainable or slower progress that is more sustainable, and write out your answer to that. And then when you're getting frustrated, read your answer. And if your answer was the intelligent one, which is the slower progress that is easier to maintain, then you'll reaffirm what you're doing is right and you'll keep on going and being consistent.
Yeah. I think people think that, you know what, I can lose the 10 pounds or something and then I'll maintain it.
Yep.
You know, I just want to lose them really quick. And because I'm going somewhere, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, and I'll be able to maintain it this time.
Yep.
You know, and there's no exit plan.
Correct.
There's no exit plan, so I think that's super important. If you do something too fast, you have no knowledge or no plan. Okay, so now what do I do? It's kind of like when I went through Jenny Craig. Yeah, I lost weight. I did what they told me to do, and I lost weight. But now what do I do? You know,
the more that I hear about this stuff, and I've used gambling analogies before, but the more and more I realize that people who yo-yo diet are sort of like gamblers mm-hmm. in terms of the ones who will go really, really strict or do the juice cleanses or do whatever it is to lose the weight quickly, and then they'll do it. Or the same thing as someone who's gambling saying, like, I'm just going to play until I win one more and then I'm done. It's like, well, number one, how do you know you're going to win?
Yeah.
Right? And number two is they never stop when they win.
Because it's always one.
It's always just one more.
I'm one more away.
I'm so close. I'm on a hot streak right now.
Yep.
It's like
it never ends.
It's the same mindset. It is the same mindset. It is the same internal struggle. It's the same where, well, listen, I did this before. I lost 20 pounds in 2 weeks. I'm just going to do it again. And this time, I'm going to maintain it. This time is going to be different. It's like you can lie to yourself all you want. You can tell me that. You can tell yourself that. You can write it in your journal, in your notebook. This time it's going to be different. But, I mean, history speaks for itself and history repeats itself. It's like you're gambling and it's not a winning strategy.
Yeah. I mean, if you're doing the same thing the same way over and over and over again, it's like the people that say, yeah, you know what, I go back to keto because it always works for me. Okay, wait a minute. That's a statement that is just one big ironic statement, I guess. You know, if it worked for you so well, why do you have to keep going back?
Right.
I mean, if something works for you, you never left.
That's exactly
right. I mean, you're there. So it's that mindset. You know, this time it's going to work for good, you know?
Which it never does.
No.
Because when you're saying that, you're basically inherently relying on motivation,
mm-hmm.
on motivation and willpower to prevent you from essentially ever indulging or enjoying in anything. Now, someone actually asked me recently on Instagram, what are my thoughts on the idea of, well, if you have to keep getting back on track, maybe it's the track that's the problem.
Right.
And I think it's twofold. I think if it's the keto example, which we have nothing against keto, we have a whole podcast on mm-hmm. keto. It's more that most people have trouble sustaining it long term, whether it's keto, no carb, paleo, vegan, whatever. It is, 500 calories a day, whatever it is. If you keep doing that and getting back on track with that, and it's unsustainable, and you keep yo-yo dieting, then yeah, it might not be a good track.
It's the track.
But if you're doing something sustainable and it's a very healthy amount of calories and it's just an overall sustainable process, but you consistently find yourself having excuses and reasons to not do it, then maybe it's not the track, and it maybe it's more about your priorities.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's more about what your I think this is a really important topic to discuss. I think it's breaking promises to yourself is a very bad habit to get into. Breaking promises to anybody is bad to do, but I think it's very easy to break a promise to yourself because mm-hmm. no one else knows about it, really. And I think the more you break a promise to yourself, the more of a habit it becomes and the easier it is to do, even though you hate it every single time. But if you say, you know what, you're really going to start, you know, tracking your calories or doing 3 meals, 2 snacks, whatever it is, or you say you're going to start going to the gym 3 times a week, it's like, we could use gym three times a week as a really good example. Going to the gym 3 times a week, assuming you have the funds to go to gym, or, you know, not even the gym, it's a workout.
Workout three times a week.
If you say you're going to work out 3 times a week, that is a very realistic thing for literally everybody in the world to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's zero reason not to be able to work out 3 times a week. I don't care if it's a 5-minute workout. Cool. You worked out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a zero reason not to do dedicated exercise and movement for at least 3 times a week. So if you're having trouble with that, it's not that it's the track. It's that you're not prioritizing it. And that's where you really have to call yourself on your nonsense and figure out, is it the track that's completely and utterly unsustainable, or is it my priorities? And I think that's a really important line to define.
Yeah, I love that too, by the way. I think that's a really important line to define because it's not always the track.
That's right.
You know, it's not always the track. I mean, it can be, but it's not always the track. Maybe, like you said, it's you giving yourself permission to keep getting off track.
Correct.
All the time. You know, and you and I talk about all the time, you get off track, just turn around and hop right back on. That's it.
That's it.
But if you're finding yourself hopping off track more often than you're like consistently on track in a row, that's a problem.
It's 100%. I think this is why the anti-diet culture movement, I don't think it's still pretty popular. I know there are a fair amount of people who follow it, but I think one of the reasons so many people do follow it is because it gives them an opportunity to blame something other than themselves.
Mm-hmm.
When it's, they say to the effect of, well, it's not you that's failed. It's the diet. Diet culture has failed you. The diets don't work. It's not that you don't work. It's the diets don't. It's like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Like, there are a whole bunch of awful diets out there. There are a lot of terrible diet and awful information out there, but there's also a ton of really good information mm-hmm. out there. And the if you're just taking away all responsibility from people and all of their ability to actually make a promise to themselves and stick with it, like, what are we doing in life? I mean, you would never say to your child, it's like, oh, like the, you know, it's the school system that failed you. It's, you know, it's like,
and unfortunately, there are parents that will go down that road. It's horrible.
And of course, there are really awful school systems.
Yeah.
There are really bad school systems.
Yeah.
But there are also children that come out of awful school systems and do amazing things.
Absolutely.
And the reality is, if you're going to put in the work, if you're going to hold yourself accountable, then you put yourself in the ability to succeed. It might be a harder route. Someone who grows up in a school system that is terrible and awful and they don't have great teachers and learning system, definitively at a disadvantage relative to someone who does have a great school system, great teachers and support. But it's really interesting. I really like watching videos and accounts from people who grew up in a place like that. Like, I was watching something recently of someone who grew up in Gaza. Someone who grew up in Gaza and got brainwashed in by like the terrorist organizations there, and how they got out, and how they were talking about how, listen, like, even in the worst environment, the worst situation possible, where it's very dangerous and life threatening, and you're just, everyone around you is like trying to brainwash you. It was so interesting to hear this actually young woman talk. She was like, it's very important to to make sure people know it's on them and it's their responsibility. It's always important to let people know that, because when you don't let them know that, when you make it seem as though it's no longer their responsibility, then you take away their desire to actually put in work at all.
Yes.
When you tell someone it's not your fault, it's diet culture's fault, then why would they ever bother work again? Because they think that there's nothing in their control. They think it's like everything is outside their control. They mm-hmm. can't do anything, so why bother?
Mm-hmm.
It's so important to make sure people know that it is their responsibility. They can do it, even if they're at a disadvantage, with PCOS or hypothyroidism,
whatever
it is.
Yeah.
Like, yes, you're at a disadvantage, but
you can still do
how
it.
Awful of a life it is to live, to think, well, it's just not worth trying anymore. Like,
yeah.
That is a horrible life.
That's an awful life. I think that's such a great point, too. that we all are in control. We are in control. It may not feel like it all the time, but we're in control. Even with PCOS, even with whatever, you're in control to do something. Maybe it's not what you really wanted to do or how you wanted to do it or whatever, but you are in control to make a positive change.
And that's why going back to we always go back to this, something is always better than nothing, right?
Yeah.
Because just if you don't know what to do and you start with walking, you've taken control.
Yes.
In one small sense, you've taken control. You've taken responsibility. You probably don't want to get up and go on a walk. You'd probably be much more comfortable in bed or on the couch watching Netflix, but you've taken control.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that you take control and the more that you take responsibility for your actions and how you're spending your time, then the more you'll make that a habit and the more you'll realize that, oh my God, I'm making progress. And then you'll be more motivated to take more action because it all started with you taking control.
Yeah.
I think one, and this is in the political climate as well, people, regardless of who's the president at any point in time, we see this whether when the Democrats are in, when the Republicans are in, doesn't matter who it is. One side is always really, really, really angry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of the anger, it comes from many things, but not least of which feeling like they feel like they have no control of what's going on in the country or the world. And they feel like, you know, if the Republicans are in, the Democrats get really mad because they feel like all this awful stuff is happening. And if the Democrats are in, the Republicans are mad because they feel like all this awful stuff is happening. And the anger is fueled by this feeling of, well, I have no control. Mm-hmm. I have no control. And you can see this down to the individual level with fitness, where it's like, well, this diet isn't working, that diet isn't working, this workout isn't working. I feel like I have no control. They get really angry and stubborn and upset. So what's the answer? Well, find what you can control.
Yeah.
Find what you can control. Find, like, in all aspects of life, find what you can control and take action on that. Because focusing on what you can't control will make you angry and upset and anxious and resentful. And I think this is why we see so much political clashing in real life, because people are so angry at each other, when it's like, when you actually focus on what you agree on and what the end goal is, there's far less bashing each other and far less hate and far less anger and far less violence. And there's much more actual cooperation to work as one unit to get to the common goal. I think that's really where you have that sort of internal battle with yourself. We have each of those sort of dividing each of us, where it's like we both have this side. We all have the side in us where we want to play the victim card. And we also all have the side in us that wants to be the hero.
Yeah.
Right? It's like if you let the victim side win, which is very easy to do, then it will win and it will take control of every aspect
of
your life.
And it's the easiest one.
So easy.
Yeah.
No hero has ever foregone all responsibility. What really the hero does is take everybody's responsibility. They take it on for themselves. They take on everybody. And the only way to be the hero is to start with yourself and start taking action for yourself and to be quote unquote selfish so that you can improve yourself and to be the hero in your own story.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be your own hero. And nobody in their right mind would say, I don't want to be a hero. Like, everybody would love to be that. Everybody wants to be someone that's admired and someone that inspires other people. And you have to start with yourself. And that you really, really have to start by taking that, because we all have it, left and right, right and left. I don't know, whatever it is, whatever side you want, top and bottom, I don't care. There's a hero side of us and a victim side of us. And the more you let the victim side win, then the stronger it gets. The more you make the harder choice to allow the hero to be the one within you that makes itself most present, then that's like the ultimate.
Yeah, and to be the hero means you have to do stuff when you don't want to, when it's not convenient, when you'd rather do something else. I mean, that's kind of what's part of that puzzle. You have to do that, and that puts us in the whole motivation thing. But that's how you do it. That's how you build habits. And, you know, we circle all the way back to the, you know, I'm eating 1,200 calories and not losing weight or something, and looking at what you're doing and how you're approaching that. Are you being accurate? Are you being honest with yourself with what's happening? Are you really in a calorie deficit? Did you really legitimately give this a shot? It just kind of circles back to all of that. And you have to do things you don't want to do.
That's right.
I mean, yeah, it's that simple. I think this is super important because I think so many people struggle with this.
It's funny. It's like we are fitness professionals, but we talk about it in a way that expands it to life in general.
Yeah.
And I'm not ever going to call myself a life coach. I don't really like that term.
Yeah.
But I think that being really good in anything forces you to take action and responsibility in a way that you can extrapolate that to all of your life,
mm-hmm.
whether it's in athletics or fitness or business or politics or relationships or psychology, whatever it is. If you want to be really, 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 really good at something, there will be sacrifices along the way. There will be doing things you don't want to do. There'll be waking up early, going to bed late, spending time doing things that are specifically designed to make you a better person and make you better in that specific role. And it's one of the things where you look at the people in the highest level of anything, whether you're looking at fighters or you're looking at firefighters or you're looking at people, doctors or lawyers, mm-hmm. the people in the highest level of anything will always say that they had to sacrifice a lot in order to get there, and mm-hmm. they had to do things that they didn't want to do in order to get there. It's like, it's the same thing with fitness. If you want to achieve a goal, then stop letting your ego get in the way and stop being so defensive and stop being so closed-minded and start opening up to being like, you know what? Maybe there's things that I can do better.
Mm-hmm. Maybe there are things I need to learn.
Yeah.
We all need to learn. And just tying this in real quick to short-term mindset versus long-term mindset, that's huge too. I think so many people live in the short-term world, the quick fix of sorts or whatever, as opposed to, you know what, if you would get that burden off your shoulders as far as a timeline, or it's not going fast enough, I didn't lose enough weight, all those things, take that weight off your shoulders, the amount of freedom you will feel, I can't even put into words what that's like. And I don't have the adequate words to, but that alone will change somebody's life. I am so convinced of that. It certainly has changed mine. It just puts everything in a different perspective. So you won't be afraid to try things. You won't be afraid to fail. You'll pick yourself up and take another route. It's the process instead of chasing, the 20 pounds or whatever.
Yeah, you said it perfectly. Yeah. When there's a timeline attached, a deadline or a finish line that's like, that you have to look the way that you ideally would love to look by this date and this time for this cocktail party, for this birthday party, for this vacation, you are inherently setting yourself up for failure. Yeah. Like you are. And when I first started doing online coaching, I would have these, like, I would say basically a month to month, like every month you can decide if you'd like to re-sign on, but I would start with what was called like basically a 90-day program. It's like, yeah, we'll do a 90-day program. Quickly, I realized it was a very bad idea, because when I said I have a 90-day program, then immediately people's thought went to, oh, I'm going to reach my goals in 90 days.
Yeah, yeah.
And what happened was is they would be very strict and very rigid for the 90 days, even though I told them not to. And the entire 90 days, all they would do is think about what they were going to do as soon as the 90 days was over. So it's the same thing when people are like, well, after all, I'm going to be super strict until vacation, then I'm going to go nuts. I'm going to be super strict until this, mm-hmm. this cocktail party, until this wedding, whatever, and then I'm going to go nuts. It's like you are literally planning a binging yo-yo cycle. That is literally what you're planning. Mm-hmm. And the only way to eliminate that is to eliminate the deadline. Because, I think one of the most common things that we see is people saying, oh, God, you should have seen me 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 5 years ago, a year ago, whatever it is. I looked so good. And they'll show me a picture. And I'll be like, let me ask you a question. When you took that picture, did you love your body? Like, did you think that was your prime ideal physique? And usually they'll be like, oh, my God, no, I hated myself in that picture. I feel like I looked awful. It's like, it's so funny that now you're looking at that picture and saying you look incredible and you wish you looked like that. When in that moment of taking the picture, you hated how you looked.
Yeah.
I think it's really important to realize that you might never get to a point in which you look at your body and say, like, this is it. I look amazing, because we're humans and we are very self-critical, and that's normal. I think it's very deceiving in social media for it to be like, just love your body. Just love it. Just love it. Did you hear me? Just love it. It's like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
You can't just tell someone to love themselves. Just like, yeah. You can't say, well, just lose weight. It's like, that's not how it works. And I think part of loving yourself, if we're going to get philosophical here, is knowing that there might be parts of you that you don't like very much,
mm-hmm.
and being okay with that and learning how to progress and move forward with that knowledge and how to continue to get better. It's sort of like we talk about perfection doesn't exist. Well, perfection doesn't exist with your body or with your mindset either,
mm-hmm.
right? A That's perfect mindset might be the perfect mindset might be, I love my body and how it looks. But we all know perfection doesn't exist. Okay, so what do we do now? Well, we know we might never get to a point in which we look at our body and love every single crevice and nook and cranny. So what can we do? Well, what we can do is keep trying it and moving forward. And even though we're on this endless pursuit for perfection, we know we'll never actually reach it. But at least by trying, we'll be better for trying and mm-hmm. be better and reach a higher goal than we would have without.
That, I think that's key. You will be far better off farther down the road than you would have been otherwise.
That's the choice that you have. It's the eternal choice.
Yeah.
Either try or don't.
Yeah.
That's it. That's what it boils down to. Try or don't.
Mm-hmm.
And trying will always yield a better result than not.
Yeah. No matter how hard it is.
Yeah.
Try something. We go back to do one thing. This is amazing.
Yeah, I love you.
Yeah, I love you more.
I'm excited to see if anyone's going to be really upset. Like, no, but you don't understand. I'm doing everything right. It's like, you should listen to the podcast.
Well, me now, we'll refer them. Where can everybody find you? Just in case they don't know, which I can't believe if you don't know.
You can just go to Google.
And search his
name. SYATT Fitness. Yeah, that's plenty.
And please go to his YouTube channel, because there's so many resources there that I think are super, super important, even related to what we talked about today.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
This was great.
Great. Love you.
Love you.